We kick off the second half of the program, and today we are here, West Knoxville, Kingston Pike at Ebenezer. That's Double Dogs, and we invite you out, as we've had a number of folks come by, Jimmy, to get registered for, as it's the day before we give away the grand prize, the Bud Light New Year's in Nashville.
Yes, and so we have had a number of folks come by for the opportunity to win a chance to go see a really nice concert at the Ryman on New Year's Eve. Then on New Year's Day, you get to go watch the Predators play. And then the next day, the Titans. Titans are playing Miami. Miami's been hot. I think they've won four or five in a row.
Yeah, they are playing much better.
Yeah, so that's a team that is playing pretty well. And so that should be a really good football game. And then you get $750 in spending money that you can use for food or your motel or a combination of both. So, yeah, Miami's won four in a row. So they were 1-7, they're now 5-7, something
correct.
Like that. Yeah. So, anyway, it's a great prize. And, by the way, make sure you come by to register today because we are going to have that drawing tomorrow. So make sure you get your name in the hat.
So come on out. We're at Double Dogs, Kingston Pike at Ebenezer. And we look forward to being joined by our good friend of ours, as Ron Higgins will join us a little bit later this hour to talk about LSU and filling its post after moving on from Ed Orgeron. Mm-hmm. And they tab Brian Kelly from Notre Dame, and it's left a pretty significant ripple, or it's made a pretty significant ripple in terms of just where this coaching carousel spins next.
Well, it has. And so our Vince Ferrara had a chance to catch up with the Sooners radio network, Chris Plank. Talked to Chris Plank about the Oklahoma job, about Heupel, about so many different things about the Sooners program. Here's Vince Ferrara's interview with Chris Plank.
Let's talk about Josh Heupel, Oklahoma, those situations and the connection between the two. Bring in a friend of the show from the Sooner Radio Network. You hear him on the Sooner Sports Podcast. Does a lot of radio, not only in Oklahoma, but you'll hear him on Sirius XM, Mad Dog Radio, SXM College as well, Channel 84, and so much more. Chris Plank at Plank Show joins us here on 99.1 The Sports Animal. Hey, Chris, appreciate you. How you doing?
I'm good, Vince. How are you, man? Thanks so much for having me on.
Man, I know it's crazy for you right now with the whole Lincoln
Riley.
It's a little
insane, man.
It is. So I want to get to that big picture in a second. But first, I want to make sure we cover this Heupel Oklahoma connection. Because honestly, Chris, we've been taking phone calls on our station and people asking us in person about what if Lincoln Riley leaves for fill-in-the-blank job and Oklahoma's interest in Josh Heupel prior to Lincoln Riley ever leaving. Obviously, the angst has been ramped up. Let's go step by step. His time at Oklahoma, though, how would you summarize, before we talk about his exit, how would you summarize his time as the OC at Oklahoma?
Yeah, it was anticipated and then quickly kind of turned on. I want to make this clear in anything that I say. I love Josh Heupel. I love him to death. He's been, you know, we didn't have a lot of time together because, you know, my first year doing sidelines was 11. And you don't get a chance to talk to a lot of assistants, but he would do some post game with us. And then in 15, when I moved down here, was his last year. Or I'm sorry, was when he was already gone and I started hosting the Coach's Corner show. So that kind of sucked. I never really had a great relationship with him, but he was great to me. I loved him to death. I'll never forget, you know, I would always introduce myself to him and he's like, enough. I know who you are. You can stop introducing yourself to me. But I love Josh Heupel, and Oklahomans for the most part, I think, love Josh Heupel. The problem is he was made the scapegoat whenever things didn't go well at the end of the 2014 season. And it was a little unfair, but I think it was taken very hard. You know, Oklahoma was Josh Heupel, and their success was based on his incredible ability, Vince, as a quarterback to quickly immerse himself in, you know, Mike Leach and Mark Mangino's system and won a national championship. And when he came here from, I'm trying to think off the top of my head, maybe it was Arizona, but when he came here to take over as the quarterback's coach and then, you know, segue into being the offensive coordinator, it was as celebrative of a move as we've had, period, at the University of Oklahoma. But, you know, unfortunately they had some quarterback issues. You know, they couldn't get a guy that could stay healthy or be consistent. They went through names like Cody Thomas, Trevor Knight, Blake Bell, Kendall Thompson, and, you know, the the reality is, you know, Josh Heupel has proven he's a great coach, but unfortunately, it didn't end the way anyone, I think, wanted it to or perceived it to whenever he was let go after the 14th season.
So there's obviously the, hey, Bob Stoops is there at Oklahoma angle. Why would he go back with Stoops there? Was it just a Bob Stoops decision? Were there boosters? Was the athletic department? How spread was that move of that decision to part ways with Josh Heupel at Oklahoma?
Yeah, that's the great question. You know, I think it was unfortunately one that was – that was across the board, mm-hmm. right? And again, it's not as if Josh Heupel was a bad coach. You know, he coached the all-time leading passer in Oklahoma Sooner history in yardage and touchdowns, and he had an explosive offense that won games and won conference titles. But, you know, there wasn't any room for anything other than someone to have to go after the disappointment of 14. And again, just a little perspective on that, you know, this was a team that was heading into the 2014 season, kind of similar, Vince, to 2021. Oklahoma wins the Sugar Bowl over Alabama and Trevor Knight dominates. He's the Sugar Bowl MVP. And then lo and behold, you know, you come back in 14 and everyone's hype. It's like, oh my gosh, this team might be able to win a championship. This team might be that team we've been waiting for, you know, since 04 and 05. And they started out just unbelievable at 4-0. And Trevor Knight's balling. They beat Tennessee by 3 scores that year. And then the bottom fell out, right? They lost to TCU on the road. They lost to Kansas State at home. They got demolished by Baylor at home. And then they lost to Oklahoma State at home in the great repunt to Tyreek Hill game, and then got smoked by Clemson. So that's a long way to tell you that it ended because he and Jay Norvell had the finger pointed at him, and they were blamed. And it's unfair. It's unfair. But that's what happened. And then Lincoln Riley came in and took over. So it was spread across a lot of people who said, Bob, you need to make changes. Bob Stoops had never really made staff changes, and he decided to go in a different direction at offensive coordinator. And that's unfortunately how it ended at OU as a coach for Josh Heupel.
Talking about the Oklahoma opening and the potential in Josh Heupel's time at Oklahoma with Chris Plank. He works for SiriusXM Sports Talk 1400 in Oklahoma, part of the Sooner Radio Network as well, and many other outlets, joining us here on 99.1 The Sports Animal. I'm Vince Ferrara. So knowing what you know, Chris, about his time there, being obviously a former Sooner great, mm-hmm. what level of interest do you think Heupel would have in returning to Norman, considering what's in place there right now?
Well, there's a lot of things I think that would be enticing to him, right? There's a new facility that's been built in the South End Zone. There's projects that are forthcoming. There's a lot of revenue that's going to be infused into this program with the move to the SEC, and then in that resources that'll be available to you. But Vince, this comes down to two things. Number one, you know, would Josh Heupel leave after 1 year at Tennessee? I don't think so. You know, I think that, you know, this is a guy that has found a spot where he's got a chance to build something pretty special. And I think that there are some people that believe in him. And, you know, would you go back to the place that fired you and not leave somewhere where, even though I think you would agree, when Josh Heupel was first hired, it was fairly underwhelming for some fans. But when they saw what he can do offensively, it becomes, oh, okay, let's go. So, you know, I would love to see Josh Heupel be a candidate and be someone that Oklahoma talks to. And I'm willing to bet that they may have reached out. But what would make this enticing to him is, you know, obviously having been a player here, knowing the resources that will be here. I mean, I don't know budgets, but I'm willing to bet it's probably right in line with Tennessee. So to me, I don't know. That bridge had been burned, but in recent years, maybe it started to be built back, right? With Bob retiring and Josh having success as a head coach. I just, in my mind, there's a lot of reasons why Josh Heupel would be and should be the head coach at Oklahoma, but there's a lot more reasons why he would probably want to stay at Tennessee and continue to to follow on what he's doing there.
And he was a guest on our radio station this morning, the Eric Haines Show, and he was asked about what's going on with the Oklahoma job. And he, without coming out and having a Lincoln Riley, not going to LSU type of answer, he tried to say that, hey, I love it here at Tennessee, looking forward to what we can build, family loves it here, all those kind of things. He actually wanted to do the interview to try to sort of calm the waters a little bit. Yeah, so I think that's smart without kind of going over the top and pinning himself into a corner like, you know, some coaches tend to do. But I also think that, you know, trying to help with recruiting, that kind of thing, at least he hasn't been in a closet. You heard from him a little bit, so I think that should be a positive in some regards for Tennessee fans.
And I'll add this too, Vince. I don't know if there is the perfect handbook as to how you handle your name being thrown into the mix at other jobs. Right. I don't know if Oklahoma fans would be any less, you know, disappointed in Lincoln Riley if he would have left today, right? Right. If he would have left when he did. It's just, don't tell us that you didn't know anything about this until Sunday morning when we all know you did. So I don't know if there's a perfect handbook, but in what Josh Heupel said on your station and how, you know, Jimbo Fisher handled the A&M rumors, there appear to be some guys that are finding the right way to do it. I'll say it. I think I'm a Tennessee fan, Vince, and not just because you're there, but I'm a Tennessee fan because I like watching good offenses, and I like watching Josh coach, and he's got a lot of really good assistants. They're building something, I think, that has the potential to be special at Tennessee, and I just don't know if now is the time when you're like, I'm out. Now, if this was – he stayed another year at UCF, right, and they had success, maybe. But I think at Tennessee, it'd be a hard sell to get him out of there.
Yeah, and not taking a hardline stance that helps you in case you end up getting a new contract extension after a year.
Absolutely.
And then
that's
also
a great way to put it.
And then to your point, that would he leave after 1 year? The Danny White aspect, too, who gave him his first gig,
right,
brought him to UT. So I agree with you from that standpoint. How floored were you that Lincoln Riley bounced to USC?
Very floored. And anyone that tells you they weren't is lying to you. It's just, it was the most shocked I've ever been over anything. I Vince, was surprised the day that Bob Stoops retired, but, and I know this sounds arrogant, but no one has left Oklahoma for another job, right? The last time that happened was 1946. And the dude left for Maryland, to kind of show you how different of a world we lived in then. But I it won't ever make any sense to me. It really won't. No, I shouldn't say that. The fact that, you know, I did a post-game interview and saw how dejected and hurt that dude was after they lost to Oklahoma State. We stood next to each other, and seeing his wife and his youngest daughter didn't go to the Bedlam game, but his older daughter did, and see them standing there. And we get the news that he had said, I'm not going to LSU. And my buddy Gabe Eichert looked down and goes, hey, finally glad I had to have all these rumors over. And she was relieved when, lo and behold, we had no idea what would be coming that next morning. I mean, I almost turned my phone off to spend the day with my fam. But yeah, it's something that has really hurt, you know, like a breakup. And I get it. You know, Oklahoma can, what's the old say, reap what they sow, with the Big 12 move to the SEC and how clandestine that was. But this has really hurt because Lincoln Riley had become OU football. He was Bob Stoops' handpicked successor, and to see things in like this, and to watch that press conference yesterday, it was surreal. I mean, I'm watching it, and I'm like, am I here? You know, is this really happening? Am I dreaming? But you know, Josie's out. He's going to get himself a good coach to replace him. Joe Stiglione on the athletic director. But it's going to take a while to heal this one, because that hurt a lot.
Well, there's so much more about that we can follow up. You have so much tremendous insight on Oklahoma and the college football scene as well. Like the whole narrative, oh, is Lincoln Riley scared of the SEC?
Right.
We can go on and on about that kind of stuff. But real quick, now that Bob Stoops is the interim, give me a couple of guys you think are at the top of the list, and maybe how far down before they do kind of ramp up interest in Josh Heupel.
Sure. Well, I don't think they'd have to get too far down. I just think Josh Heupel would say, I'm staying here. But that's me.
Right.
Brent Venables, Clemson defensive coordinator, was here from the day that Bob Stoops stepped on campus until 2011, and won a national championship, then went off to Clemson and won two national titles. There's many, Vince, that think that he's the guy and it's done. Now, I think Joe Castiglione might be a little bit more calculated in this search, but We'll see. So Brent Venables is the name. Shane Beamer's name has been brought up, but kind of like Josh, you know, I think that Shane's got a really good job and his family loves it in South Carolina. Again, if this would have happened last year and Shane was on staff, this might be a no-brainer elevation. Shane Beamer would be the head coach at Oklahoma today. I don't know, but Shane Beamer's name has been brought up. And look, I love the assistants, right? I love the Lannings at Georgia, the Jim Leonards at Wisconsin. These are the kind of guys that I look at and think, boy, they fit that profile of what Joe Castiglione has hired in the past. Up-and-coming coordinators, guys who just maybe need an opportunity to be the next Lincoln Riley or to be the next Josh Heupel, whatever it might be. So I think all eyes are on Venables right now, and if that doesn't happen, then I think you're going to start seeing a myriad of names that will arise for this. But it appears as if this is kind of pigeonhole focused on one Brent Venables right now.
Chris Plank, Sooners Radio Network, Sirius XM, a lot of outlets. Tell people where they can find your work, follow you on Twitter and everything, Chris.
Yeah, just hit me up on Twitter at Plank Show. This has been a wild time. No BS, Vince. I've picked up more followers in the last 48 hours than I have on anything I've ever done in my life. And I don't know why. I mean, it's like, I'm just sitting here watching along with you guys, but I'm taking this coaching search seriously. I'm talking to my sources. I'm trying to get as many people to spill the beans. Joe Castiglione works in anonymity, so I'll do my best to keep people updated. And I try to put when I'm on, where I'm on all the time there. So give me a follow at Plank Show. And Vince, you know, I'm your biggest fan, man. I really appreciate you having me on today.
Man, you're the best. That's why I wanted to get you on.
Thanks, buddy.
Tennessee connection was obvious. So thanks, Chris. Appreciate you. We'll be in touch soon.
Anytime, man.
All right. That is Chris Plank from the Sooner Radio Network, Sports Talk 1400 in Oklahoma here.
Really good interview with Chris Plank. When we come back, let's comment on some of the things that he said and also a little bit about the Oklahoma job, which I think would intrigue some folks.
And we are here at Double Dogs, 8910 Kingston Pike, 8910 Kingston Pike. It's right at the intersection with Ebenezer, and we invite you out today as we're taking folks as registration for the Bud Light New Year's in Nashville contest, and we are giving away the grand prize tomorrow. And, Jimmy, I don't know if at the start of the season it would have shaken out this way, but with the regular season over, the final USA Today SEC power rankings, Tennessee finished sixth at 7-5.
That's pretty strong. Probably helped a little bit by A&M losing.
Correct.
Which dropped A&M behind Tennessee. But number six in the SEC, when you think about – I would bet you most of the year – Tennessee was 10th or 11th.
Yes.
And then they started to climb a little bit as they continued to win and some other teams faltered. But that's pretty impressive that they got to that ranking. That's upper half of the SEC.
It is. Georgia obviously finished first. And then you have a tie for second as it was Alabama and Ole Miss shared spot number two in their final regular season rankings. Kentucky was fourth. Arkansas fifth. And then Tennessee sixth. If you had said at the start of the season, I'm going Tennessee sixth and Mississippi State seventh in the overall 1-14 power rankings, I don't think you would have had any company. Not little, any.
You'd have been on that island with Tom Hanks.
That's right, exactly.
That is pretty crazy. But they did a great job. Had talking to Tony Barnhart earlier, he was mentioning so many different coaches. He had five coaches in his group. He only listed four. I'm wondering if Mike Leach was his fifth.
Well, they far exceeded the preseason projection and expectation. Yeah. They were going to be last in the West. But Tennessee and Mississippi State finish ahead of Texas A&M at 8, Auburn 9, and LSU 10. If I'm not mistaken, in some way, shape, or form, those teams would have been ranked 2, 3, and 4 in the preseason Western Division projection.
To see LSU and Florida end up with 500 seasons,
yes,
you know, that is shocking. And I actually think LSU has a little bit more talent than Florida. Mm-hmm. But to see both of those teams falter like that's pretty amazing. Would have never guessed that. But hey, that's what to me makes college football so intriguing, is you sometimes you think you know,
yep,
but you don't always know.
And then Florida, which was a top three team at one point in the early part of the season in regards to the SEC power rankings, got as low as 13 in one survey,
yeah,
but they finished 11th. So it was LSU 10, Florida 11, South Carolina 12, Missouri 13, and Vanderbilt 14. And I saw somebody tweet at Vanderbilt today, congratulations, Commodores, you are the only SEC team that is not bowl eligible.
Well, here's another thing about that ranking. Florida lost to South Carolina and Missouri.
You're right. You're exactly right.
The 12th and 13th teams in the ranking.
That's true.
Wow. So it was intriguing in many respects. And I think Florida's a quick rebuild. Now, when I say quick rebuild, and LSU even more so, because I think there's more talent at LSU, provided 48 of them don't go into transfer portal. But I think that because, LSU has more – both of them have enough good players to where I think you'll have enough buy-in. You won't see, like, Florida, they quit, I thought, in the South Carolina-Missouri games. They could care less about playing those games. I wonder if they could care less about going to the Gasparilla Bowl or the Birmingham Bowl, wherever they may be headed.
Right.
They just don't strike me as giving a care about that. I had to think about my word there.
Right.
So there was an old Don DeVoe saying I almost went to, but didn't. But yeah, I think that those teams, they have enough good players. Now, here's the thing too about Florida: Emory Jones, is he just a lost cause?
Right.
Anthony Richardson, is he a lost cause? If Dan Mullen can't get it out of you, it makes me wonder if a new coach can. Because Mullen has been really good about developing quarterbacks.
We are at Double Dogs on Kingston Pike, right where it meets up with Ebenezer. Come on out, get registered for the Bud Light New Year's in Nashville contest. We give away the grand prize tomorrow. And, Jimmy, we now head to the Stanley Fencing and Gates hotline for a longtime friend of the program.
Absolutely. Ron Higgins with Tiger Rag in Baton Rouge. Ron, how you doing?
I'm good. Shut up. The football press conference today and a basketball game tonight, so it's a good day.
There you go. Were you surprised at the hiring of Brian Kelly? We were here in Lincoln Riley. Were you surprised by Kelly?
I heard Kelly, like, early on, like, from the first people they approached, and either he kind of said he wasn't interested, but let me put it aside, and then he was kind of not heard of again. Then all these went through all these names, you know, Kiffin, Lincoln Riley. But the interesting thing is that Lincoln Riley and Brian Kelly and LSU athletic director Scott Wilbert have the same agent. And it's not Jimmy Sexton. How about that?
What? That's an upset.
Whoa.
Yeah. That's the upset of the year. Yeah. And so it kind of went that way. Yeah, go ahead.
How would you grade the hire? A plus, A? What do you think?
I think it's an A-plus hire. But LSU wanted a guy who was all business. He wanted, he reminds you a lot of Nick Saban. Business, very businesslike. Not mean, but just straightforward. And considering what they just went through, it's really what they need. They need a guy who's, you know, very disciplined. Has a plan on how to win. It's been consistent in what he does as far as winning. It kind of fits the bill with what Scott Ward has done this year in hiring coaches. Back in April, he hired Kim Mulkey. He's been in Baylor for 21 years. And he hired a baseball coach in Arizona who is a guy who's a very straightforward, direct guy who's won. It's just like he's lining up these people that they're kind of all in the same mold of being straightforward, direct, have a plan, consistent winners, and give them all the resources they need to kind of take it to another level. And I do think that's one reason. Another reason Kelly came here. Let's face it. Besides the hefty contract. He's 60 years old. He's the oldest head coach LSU's ever hired. He knows his window of coaching is closing, and he hasn't won a national championship. And he's won a ton of games at Notre Dame, but he's gotten killed in the playoffs against Alabama and Clemson and lost a BCS national championship to Clemson to Alabama because simply he didn't have the same athletes that the Southern teams have. But, you know, whether it's because of academic restrictions or just there's not enough athletes in the North like the South has, and now he has access to all that. I think he feels pretty good about that.
So Les Miles won a national championship at LSU. So did Orgeron, but they didn't sustain that success. Do you think Brian Kelly's record at Notre Dame suggests he will be able to sustain success at a high level?
Yeah, that's they wanted somebody who's stable and consistent and has shown it has a track record that they've just won. I mean, Kelly had one bad year about 6 years ago. He was 4-7. He changed some things around. He's had five straight years of 10 wins or more. Again, but he hadn't won the national championship. He's been in the playoffs two of the last 3 years. So they've been there. But again, you know, when they play these SEC teams with this, you know, quicker athletes at every position, including on the line, they hadn't been able to match them. Well, I think in his mind, you know, I'm 60 years old. I need to, if I want to win the national championship, I need to go somewhere where I can do this. And LSU came along and you know, offered him. And the more he looked at it, the more he realized it's probably a really good move. And you know, he's unlike Lincoln Riley, he's kind of running into the fire in the SEC. Lincoln Riley went the other way.
Yeah.
I mean, really, all he has to do in the Pac-12 is deal with Oregon and Utah. That's it. You know, Brian Kelly likes this challenge.
Well, it is a challenge, no doubt, just simply for the fact that it was a quick step back for LSU after putting together one of the more magical seasons 2 years ago. And looking at it now in the rearview mirror, was it a combination of things that led to Ed Orgeron's downfall or the program's downfall with Coach O leading the way? I mean, was it Joe Burrow, the lightning in a bottle? Was it losing key coordinators who went on to become head coaches or move on to the NFL? What do you think was the biggest reason why it fell so quickly in Baton Rouge, Ron?
Well, they lost a lot of talent, but I'd say for the most part, Ed Orgeron hired bad coordinators. They made bad coaching hires, including admitting that the guys he hired in the coordinating job for the 2020 season, he didn't even interview. Didn't even interview him, just hired him. Honestly, I mean, straight up, I think basically after he got his lottery contract, right after after they won the national championship, and after the lottery contract, he divorced his wife. So I think Ed decided he's just going to have a hell of a time until they fired him, honestly. I think he checked out, and he couldn't figure out how to hire good people ever again. And this team was so poorly coached with such great talent. And that was the aggravating thing about watching this team. And he didn't have any answers. You could ask Ed something like, you know, it seems like the running game just wasn't working today. What was the problem? He goes, well, we need more diversity in our run game. We need to run more runs out of more formations. We're not doing that. So didn't you know that going into the game? Couldn't you make an adjustment halftime? This was all year. Every game was something like this. And he'd always say, well, this is my responsibility. It's my fault. I'll take responsibility. After every game this year, he said something like that. It got to the point where, like, why are you coaching even the head coach for? He knows your responsibility, and you can't fix it. You hire these guys.
We, of course, have seen with Lincoln Riley's departure from Oklahoma, a lot of Sooners hit the transfer portal. We've seen the same thing in Gainesville after they made the change that they did in ditching Dan Mullen. Have there been many that have hit the transfer portal in Baton Rouge?
To go elsewhere, I mean, they've had a few. Eli Ricks, their starting cornerbacks, I mean, he entered the transfer portal. A lot of these guys, some of these guys who entered, most of the guys who went on transfer portal were like injured most of the year. And they just decided to not come back. But Eli Ricks is the most notable one. I mean, he was our starting cornerback at all SEC a year ago. Yeah, he's a nice talent. I don't know if he'll come back now, but they got to have a head coach. But there wasn't a whole lot of defections as far as transfer portal for LSU. Just a lot of injuries this year. And again, poor coaching hires. Get them in.
Our guest, Ron Higgins with Tiger Rag. Ron, I'm going to throw this out there, and I may be wrong, but it seemed like when Nick Saban got there, he didn't lose many of the best players in the state of Louisiana. It seemed like that LSU was losing some of the better players, maybe some to Alabama even, but Do you think that's true? And secondly, do you think Brian Kelly can stop that?
Well, yeah, I think Brian Kelly knows he can stop that. They, LSU lost a few to Alabama, but still LSU got most of the best players in the state. And, mm-hmm. I mean, there were some years where they went out and the talent wasn't as good as it has been in the state. He went out Santa Cruz. Look, recruiting was never Ed Orgeron's problem. That was never his problem. His problem was how to make them better, how to coach them.
Yeah.
You know, 2019 was a perfect storm of everything went right. I mean, he hired Joe Brady from the Saints, who was basically an analyst with the Saints, and he didn't even know how good Joe Brady was. He told me that. I didn't know how good he was until we got him. And then, you know, he got Joe Burrow from Ohio State, and he got put Burrow with Brady the second year that Burrow was here, and he put receivers that are leading the NFL in receiving right now on that team they have, and then Clyde Edwards-Helaire, who starts for Kansas City, all this talent on both sides of the ball, and you have a national champion. And then a lot of that left, and he didn't know how to maintain, but his biggest losses were probably losing Joe Brady and Dave Aranda, coach with Baylor now. He never really has replaced those guys with anybody any good.
Brian Kelly's staff, do you see him bringing a lot of folks from Notre Dame? How do you see that working out?
I think he wants to bring some. I mean, I think he'd like to bring his coordinators. I know that. There's a couple of guys on this staff who will probably retain. Corey Raymond, the defensive backs coach, he does a great job and probably their best recruiter. And Kevin Falk, the running backs coach, who's LSU's all-time rushing leader. He'll probably retain them. But we'll see how it shakes out. And honestly, I mean, LSU will, they'll get a bowl bid at 6-6. I mean, name an interim coach, but Kelly talked today, he's going to discuss with the athletic director, depending on what date the bowl is, he may want to coach the bowl.
Wow.
Yeah.
In terms of we've seen that the reaction has kind of gotten thumbs up in terms of from the media. What do you think in terms of the fan base? Are they excited about this hire?
I think the fan base are excited. They just have to understand that this guy's more like Nick as far as a business-like approach and not, Mr., not like Les, who was just like this your bumbling grandfather, or Ed Orgeron, who basically a Cajun guy, loved Louisiana, said go Tigers a lot, ran around with, went jogging with his shirt off, taking pictures with people, man of the people. This guy's not that. This guy's about winning. So, he's about winning. And I saw some social media stuff today, somebody posted. Well, I noticed that he didn't say go Tigers at his press conference. Listen, man, this guy didn't say go Tigers. This guy's going to say, I'm here to win. I don't care about go Tigers or all that kind of stuff. This guy's business, and I like it. It's refreshing. After what I've covered since I've been here, I came back from Memphis to here. When I covered Les and Ed, it's refreshing to have a guy. When you ask him a question, he usually gives you a pretty direct and honest and good answer that makes sense, rather than have Les stumble around and then. Ed said the same thing every week.
Is there any sadness or mourning on your part that you won't be able to dust off your Coach O impression on a regular basis now?
No, the last thing Coach O said at his press conference on Saturday, and somebody told me this because I wasn't there. Ed's at his press conference, and he has his blonde girlfriend at the press conference. And the last thing he says was, I'm going to Destin. Come on, let's go, babe. That's it. Walked out the door. What? I mean, it was like, what? I mean, I saw this. I said, that really happened. He goes, honestly, God, that's the way it happened. Yeah. So he's down in Destin right now, probably tanning himself. He was the smartest one out of all of us. He cashed in his lottery ticket and got $16.9 million as a settlement. He can lay on the beach for as long as he wants.
He can run the beach with his shirt off.
That's right. Red Bulls all around.
He can finance a whole Baywatch remake starring himself.
You know what I mean? Oh.
Him and Hasselhoff. Yeah.
Max Johnson, can LSU win at a high level with him at quarterback?
You know, if he gets with the right coach, yeah. I mean, Mac, you know, if you look at his stats, he's probably had like the fifth best yardage season in LSU history. He's second in touchdowns for most touchdowns in a season. Of course, the number one is Joe Burrow's 60 in one season, one per quarter for 15 games. It's still stunning. But
yeah,
Max held the ball too long a lot of times. But honestly, he also didn't have very good blocking a lot of times too. They've got Walker Howard, a five-star coming in from Lafayette next year. He's a hell of a quarterback. We'll see. I mean, Max had his games this year where he was really good, and had games where it just seemed he was slow to pick up secondary receivers, and then he probably stayed in the pocket too long and held the ball. But it was a combination of things. Receivers didn't get open quick enough. The offense was pretty much a disaster all year. You never knew what you'd get from series to series, much less week to week.
Just a few seconds left. Where's Mile Brennan headed? Do you know?
I don't know, but I would tell you one thing. If he would have stayed well this year, LSU probably, I would say, would have gone about 8-3. I would say 9-3. He was that good. I mean, the people, of course, you know, people around here, after Brennan got hurt last year and then Johnson came on at the end of the year, they thought, you know, Max Johnson's a best quarterback on campus. Miles Brennan had the better spring game, and Miles Brennan was, you know, a fifth-year senior who made all the reads, knew all the offense, could get it done quickly, had a great arm. I'll be interested to see where he ends up at, because somebody's going to get a really good quarterback. He's a very resilient kid. You know, his family lived on the coast, and his family home got wiped out by fire, and they rebuilt it and got wiped out by a hurricane. So he's a resilient kid, tough kid. Yeah.
Hey, Ron, thank you so much for joining us. Really do appreciate it and look forward to visiting with you again in the future.
And I buried my Coach O invitation forever after the last one. There you go.
An exclusive.
There you go. All right, Ron, appreciate that. That's Ron Higgins with Tiger Rag.
Joining us on the Stanley Fencing and Gates Hotline. And, of course, if you happen to miss any or part of our previous interviews today or any day, make sure that you go to 99.1thesportsanimal.com, as you'll be able to catch it up with not only podcasts of our show, but also all of the local programming. So if there's an interview you heard about but missed, you can find it at 99.1thesportsanimal.com. Coming up, hour number four of the program, and Jimmy, we're going to talk some Titans football with our friend Dave McGinnis.
Yes, we look forward to Dave McGinnis visiting with us. The Titans have been a little bit of a slump here, didn't play well at New England. We'll get his take on that and how they can recover and get back to the way they played earlier in the season.
We'll catch up with Coach Mack. Up next, it's your chance to win. It's the Sports Fix at 6. Hour number 4 is next on 99.1 The Sports Animal.
Named one of the best personal finance podcasts, The Stacking Benjamin Show with Joe and his friends makes financial literacy fun.
Work hard and save your money. That way, when you're old like me, you can buy the things that only young people can enjoy.
Squirrel watching.
You heard it here first. Get yourself a squirrel cam. Spend $30 a month on nuts, and you'll be at early retirement before you know it.
No, Piggy, this is the road to a podcast nobody listens to.
Find out more by searching The Stacking Benjamins podcast wherever you listen.